I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and this is Up to Date. Max Strom has taken his approach to yoga and philosophy worldwide. His teachings combine meditation, physical healing, and self-reflection to help people move more peacefully through everyday life. This hour, Max tells us how simple things like better breathing can lift moods, improve focus, and strengthen relationships. We'll also hear the latest installment of 90 Mile View, and Brian McTavish is here with the weekend to-do list. We'll get you up to date after this hour's news. Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. So many of us are stressed. So many of us are depressed. You'd think it wouldn't be that way, given how technology is supposed to be changing our lives, at least for the better. But the evidence is overwhelming that stress levels and depression levels are way, way up. What to do about it? Max Strom has some ideas. Max Strom teaches personal transformation and yoga worldwide. He talks about the emotional and spiritual aspects of our lives, as well as physical healing. Max is in town for workshops in connection with the Yoga Gallery in downtown Overland Park. Max in the studio with me right now, and so good to have you, Max.
It's so Welcome. Good to be here. Yeah. Wonderful to meet you, Steve.
Great. I thought this high-tech world we live in was supposed to make our lives simpler and calmer, and you're here to tell me it's not. What are you seeing out there, Max?
Yeah, I travel a lot. I go to about 45 cities a year, 10 countries, so I see a huge cross-section of people. And as information technology keeps exploding and growing exponentially, you have to watch these other statistics, which is the use of pharmaceuticals to make people happier. And unfortunately, that's not going up. That's going down. For example, now in this country, the use of antidepressants and anti-anxiety drugs have grown in the wrong direction to where we have now 1 out of 4 women in the United States are taking these pharmaceuticals.
1 out of 4 women.
Yeah.
Wow.
And it's not that much different with men. It's a little less. And so since I've released my book 2 years ago, the statistics have skyrocketed even since then. And I understand in Saudi Arabia, it's 50% of women.
So why?
Yeah.
I mean, that's not supposed to be working that way. At least that wasn't the original idea.
That wasn't
here.
The deal, was it?
No, it wasn't the deal. Yeah.
Especially in the richest countries in the world, this is where it's really happening. Industrial countries like Beijing, London, you know, Tel Aviv, Dubai, I teach there. In the Beijing hospital, the number one health complaint is sleep. And that's another huge issue. We now have 80 million Americans taking sleep drugs every night.
Which makes you wonder, we don't really understand what the internet is doing to us and what smartphones are doing to us or anything else, right?
No.
Yeah. You know, there's another incongruity that you talk about, Max, and you say that while we're awash in smartphones, we don't communicate any better than we used to, with so many people remaining starving for intimacy. How can that be?
Yeah, I think that we are starving for intimacy. And when I say that, I'm referring to friendship, non-sexual intimacy right now. That's what I'm referring to. We're starving for it, and I think one of the reasons is that human beings, according to science, communicate 90% nonverbally. This is an astonishing statistic that I think everybody should know, 90%. So if we're communicating mostly through text, it's a 10% relationship. So we're feeling, if you feel like something's missing, there is. It's 90% of human interaction.
And we're all committed to our phones and not getting the full Monty here at all.
Yeah. So there's nothing wrong with using text. I use it. I send some text messages, maybe one a day. We'll see you in 5 minutes or whatever. I use emails. But if there's any miscommunication or if it's emotional content, pick up the phone. Or walk in the next room if they're there.
You know, so these are issues out there that don't seem to be, you know, going away. What do you recommend that we do about it?
Well, we really have to take charge of our own life. Because commerce, it's in their interest to sell us these things. I mean, they're going to sell them as long as we buy them. So the market's going to have to decide what is enough, what is what we want, just like everything else. So the first piece of advice I give people is any piece of electronic equipment that you bring into your life should give you more free time, not less. Free time is something we need to start putting value on, mm-hmm. not scheduled to do something, not sitting in front of a video game. That's not really even free time. That's entertainment. Talking about time to interact with other people, to be in nature, or even to sit alone with yourself and explore yourself in terms of meditation, contemplation, prayer, whatever it is that you believe is best for you.
What a concept, Max. You don't hear people talking about that very much these days, do you?
Unfortunately, no, but I think we're going to hear more and more of it because people are getting desperate. I teach in some very high-stress areas like the Greenwich, Connecticut area, a lot of bankers and hedge fund people, and they come up to me after workshops and say things very quietly like, I'm taking the highest dose of legal sleep medication that I can, and I can't sleep anymore. They're desperate to sleep. They're desperate not to feel anxious or depressed. Wow. They don't know what to do, so they're just turning toward medication.
We're visiting with Max Strom, an author and yoga instructor. You know, Max, you point to another issue out there. I heard you say this in your TED Kansas City talk, your TEDx mm-hmm. Kansas City talk, which is this idea that I'd never really thought about much before, and that's this idea that we aren't taught to be happy. Mm-hmm. You know, no one teaches us how to be happy. Why do you think that is, and why aren't we taught something as elemental as how to be happy?
I have no idea. I don't know why. I don't know how it happened. But I think there's been an assumption that if we become successful, we'll become happy. So most of our teachings or the messages from our parents and society are become successful, get a great education, work hard, make money, and you'll be happy. But that doesn't work out when you look at the statistics I just gave you. The most successful, richest countries in the world, especially cities, people are not so happy. So that turns out, unfortunately, to be a myth, that the more money you have, the happier you'll be. So we need to start teaching, I think, children about happiness. And the very first thing we need to ask ourselves, anyone listening, is how do I define happiness? What is it to me? And are my actions serving that? One example I gave at the TED Talk that you saw is the fact that modern medicine has acknowledged that breathing exercises are fantastic for women giving birth. And this is well known. Probably half the people listening to this have done Lamaze.
Sure.
Okay, so we know that deep breathing helps with pain management, with focus, and not panicking under very stressful circumstances. Okay, but why is that only good for pregnant women having children? What about the rest of us?
That's interesting.
Yeah, but it's not taught to the rest of us. You don't go to the burn unit and find people being taught breathing exercises.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is starting to change. I know there are some great teachers out there that are bringing this work in, but it's slow. And I think we really need to start looking at what's obvious that we're missing. And one is, what's happiness? Am I actually following a path that makes sense? And what actions can I take that are free, like breathing exercises, that have proven work? Why aren't I doing them?
You know, I hear you saying that you think we're at something of a pivot point here, mm-hmm. that perhaps people are waking up to this idea that whatever we're doing, we're not doing it the right way.
I think so. I think that there's so much emphasis put on the economic collapse that happened. We're not noticing an emotional collapse. I really think that there's an emotional collapse of our society. And like I said, it's not going to come at us from the top. The government's not going to help us with this, and commerce isn't going to help us. Because there's not a lot of money to be made teaching people how to be happy without buying things, and that they can do exercises at home that are free,
yeah.
that'll help them.
Max Strom is conducting a pair of workshops this Sunday in connection with the Yoga Gallery in downtown Overland Park. One workshop will be on the power of breath and movement and will be a yoga practice and lecture. The other will be on personal ethics and is appropriate for folks with no yoga experience whatsoever. There's more information at yogagallery.com, and there's a link for the Yoga Gallery on our website at kcur.org. Max, talk to us about breathing. When you talk about breathing, what do you mean, really?
Yeah. Well, there's two types of breathing, if you want to break it down scientifically. One is subconscious breathing and one is conscious breathing. Now, most people breathe subconsciously all the time. They don't think about it.
Sure.
They don't control it. But we are capable, and we're one of the only animals that is capable, of deciding when to breathe and how to breathe. When our conscious mind takes over our breathing, and we breathe slowly and deeply, and of course, there are more specifics than that, our nervous system starts to calm down immediately. Our blood pressure starts to go down to where it should be immediately, and we feel better. That's the very first thing that happens.
It's simple stuff,
it sounds like. It is simple. It's something that can be learned in an hour, the basics.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do it for 10 minutes a day, you'll have a different life, quite honestly. Because our emotions build up, like anger, frustration, stress. And breathing is one of the things, deep breathing, that releases it literally from your body so that you don't become so reactive to your family or coworkers.
Interesting. So the way to change the world then is to begin changing yourself, is what you're saying.
Exactly. I think that we can't really change the world and totally change ourselves. I mean, if you look at going back to the economic collapse, that wasn't a tech mistake. Technology is not going to prevent that from happening again. That was an ethics collapse, mm-hmm. talking about collapses, mm-hmm. Both in banking and in government, gradually creating this terrible situation where that could happen. So poverty, war, and corruption are not tech issues. Now, poverty will be partly solved, I believe, by the information technology revolution,
mm-hmm.
but not war and corruption. We're just going to have more high-tech weapons and more ways to exploit. So to change the world, we have to change ourselves, and that includes our ethics. Yeah, and I think that someone will tend to be more ethical who is healthier and happier. The more in pain we are, the more selfish we become, and the more healed we are, the more selfless we become.
You know, bottom line is we're just going too fast.
Too fast.
We're moving too fast.
And aiming at the wrong targets.
Mm-hmm. 816-235-2888 is our phone number here if you want to join our conversation with Max Strom. Again, 816-235-2888, our email address, UpToDate at kcur.org. You can also tweet us at kcurUpToDate. You know, once upon a time, Max Strom, you were a football player. And I'm wondering how you made your way to the world of yoga.
Yeah, I was.
You're built like a football player, by the way, like an offensive right tackle.
Yes, I kind of break the mold of a yoga person.
I was going to say, yeah. you don't scream yoga when I first see you. Yeah,
actually, I was a defensive left tackle, but you're close.
Yeah, close.
Yeah.
Were you good?
I was. I was a headhunter. I was the guy that the quarterbacks feared.
But, like Deacon Jones, right?
Yeah, kind of like that. But what happened to me is I'm also naturally an empathetic person, I think. And even though I was wanted to make as many tackles as possible, I really started hurting people. I was really strong and I was fast. And I blew out some knees of opponents, not intentionally at all, just tackling, just playing. And it was after I knocked out another halfback that tried to run straight at me, knocked him out cold, that I started realizing that, you know, he might not wake up. The game went on and on, the timeout, the ambulance, the doctors. Ugh. And I started feeling nauseous as I realized he may never wake up or he may only wake up partially. Hmm. This is really serious business, what we're doing here. This kid might die. And after that, I decided not to play the next season. I just couldn't do it. I couldn't ignore that part for the sake of the fun.
Did he wake up?
He did after about 10 minutes, and he was okay.
Good to hear.
But that was the trigger point for me.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say, football and empathy aren't exactly kissing cousins or anything, are they?
No.
Well, how did you make your way to yoga from the football field?
Well, I became very interested in the big questions of life at an early age. At around 15, I started really wondering, what's life about? Is there a God? Is there a heaven? What happens after we die? And I didn't want to just take the pat answers that most people were taught. I wanted to really understand and go inward. So I started meditating and I started reading like crazy. I was reading college level comparative religion books at this age, and became active. It became my sole focus. It wasn't the usual 15-year-old activity at that point.
I was going to say.
Yeah. But it led me over a long haul to eventually practicing Qigong. And I loved that, but my teacher eventually moved away. And then eventually I found Hatha Yoga. And
explain those first two terms you just threw out. The first one.
Qigong?
Yeah, what is that exactly?
Good. Qigong is essentially Chinese yoga. It looks similar to Tai Chi. Most people know what Tai Chi is.
Sure.
It's very slow motion movement with specific breathing exercises. It's usually done standing. And this doesn't just promote health, it promotes a calm nervous system.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a calm nervous system, for those who don't understand what that means, it's the opposite of what you feel now. It's instead of stress or anger or angst, it's feeling calm but alert, not an opiate. My IQ's dropped 20 points calm.
Right.
A very sharp mental calm, which we remember vaguely from our childhood, but most of us don't experience. So that's Qigong. And yoga, which is from India, is a little different, but they're really sister practices.
I read about you the first time you went to do yoga. A friend took you, if I'm recalling the story correctly, Max, and you went to the practice, and it was an advanced level of yoga. And just from my own experience with yoga, I can only begin to appreciate how difficult that might have been. You went through the practice. You were exhausted afterwards. But clearly, the light bulb for you went off because you were hooked and hooked hard at that point.
That's right.
What was it? What happened to you during that hour?
Well, at that point, I wasn't sleeping really well because I was under a lot of stress. I had a lot of neck pain from my work, which was at a desk. But I was athletic. I ran and lifted weights all the time. Every day. So I thought I was in great shape. When I went to yoga, really not understanding what it was. So why was I there? I was dragged by my girlfriend, like most guys who go to yoga.
Yeah.
They're dragged by their wife or their girlfriend.
Patty Furman dragged me there, by the way.
There you go.
Exactly. Not quite a girlfriend, but a friend. Yeah.
Yeah, it's dragged nonetheless.
Yes.
Well, what happened was I saw it. Well, what is this? Is this a sport? Is this martial arts? What is it? But I approached it like sports. In other words, I competed. I thought, okay, who's the best person here? And I'm going to beat them.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah? And I exhausted myself. It would be like going to the gym for the first time to the weight room and saying, who's the strongest person? I'm going to lift more your first day.
Yes.
So you can imagine how I felt afterward. I almost threw up at the end of class.
Mm-hmm.
And then I slept better than I had slept in 20 years. It was amazing. And I felt so good for the next 2 days. I realized I'd really stumbled onto something.
Yeah.
So I went back and found some beginner's classes and started over, just started over.
You know, my great memories of doing yoga, you know, being a cold winter day, going into a heated studio and you loosen up and do the thing and it's just magic. I mean, it really is. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah. Especially if you give up the whole competition thing.
Yes.
If you just work at a sensible pace so you don't hurt yourself, you feel so good. And the benefits, it just sounds too good to be true, but you do sleep better. If you're depressed, you tend to be far less depressed, maybe even not depressed anymore. Anxiety is something that's really something that dissipates quickly from the breathing.
But why? I mean, why does yoga do all that stuff, Max? What is it?
Well, let's isolate the breathing for a second because that's the most confounding part. Our lungs are associated with feelings that we have, and in particular, inspiration and grief. And if you actually look at the word inspiration, it comes from inspiritu, to be filled with spirit. It's Latin. And most ancient languages use the same word for spirit or emotion, and breath. Now, you know, and I know that if someone is struck with grief, they cry or even sob. So what happens when you sob is your lungs start to spasm. The lungs express our grief. Our breathing, which is rhythmic, ceases to be rhythmic, and it feels like someone's stepping on our chest. It's a very physical experience, mm-hmm. not to mention the saline solution dripping down our face.
Yeah.
And we express our deep grief from our exhales. So we have to understand that when we breathe deeply, we can help to purge, essentially, stored emotions that are in our body. And as strange as this sounds, I invite you to come to my breathing workshop. I've never taught a breathing shop ever where at least 75% of the class didn't have saline solution on their face afterward that came down from their eyes.
Why is it so effective? Why is yoga so effective? And why isn't going for a jog giving me the same thing?
Well, there's two reasons. Going for a jog, you probably are disassociating from your body. You either have headphones on, you're listening to music, or you're thinking, mm-hmm. planning, organizing, daydreaming.
Okay.
When you're in yoga, you're supposed to associate with your body, meaning your mind stays in your body, focused the entire 90 minutes. It listens, your brain, to your breath the whole time. This creates a loop of consciousness, which we don't get anywhere else.
And the yoga instructor, the leader, helps direct you when you're doing all this, right?
That's correct.
The person who's guiding you along the way.
That's correct. Once you learn it, of course, you can do it anywhere. You can take it with you anywhere.
Yeah. That breathing workshop Mac is talking about takes place on Sunday. It's all in connection with the Yoga Gallery in downtown Overland Park. More information about all of that, yogagallery.com. Yoga Gallery is spelled funny, YOGALLERY, but there's a link on our website, kcur.org, that'll take you right there to get more information about all of this. 816-235-2888 is our phone number here, our email address, updatedate@kcur.org. If you're involved with yoga and can talk about its benefits for you, give us a call, 816-235-2888. Richard from Blue Springs, good morning.
Good morning.
Hi.
I enjoy your program. I wanted to add just a couple of things. First of all, I'm an Asian American, so I have been a practitioner of this or have known about meditation and yoga for some time, although didn't really get to become a practitioner myself until I was about 50 or so. And it was a hard slog to learn to meditate through breathing, but once I learned it, I realized how beneficial it was. And being in healthcare, one of the things that I have found is quieting the mind so you have this quiet mindfulness helps in a lot of different ways. The one comment I wanted to make was I had seen a program and done some reading. This program was on Nova. It was on one of the public channels. And this was some research being done by neuroscientists and physicists in quantum mechanics. They wanted to understand what it is when people talk about multidimension and whether or not, if it's possible for us, normal human beings, to access that. Because what they found is with some of the Tibetan monks who practice meditation, deep meditation, they were able to describe things that in our normal dimension and normal activities, we just don't understand. Well, what they found in some of this research, and this has been some time ago, and I guess this research has continued, was they found that parts of our brain, very old parts of our brain, the amygdala and very deep primordial parts of our brain, for most human beings, have shrunken in due to disuse atrophy. But in these Tibetan monks, because they practice meditation, when they examined them with MRIs, active MRIs and PET scans, they found that it was very active. And what they were postulating, and I don't know how far this research has gotten, but I found out that at that time, they thought that we have the ability in that part of the brain to actually send and receive messages from multi-dimensions. That's why there are people that claim they have ESP capabilities or they can see the future.
Richard, let me get
those kinds of things.
Yeah, I appreciate your comments. Let me get Max to chime in here. Can you connect with what he's talking about there, Max?
I haven't read the specific thing he's talking about, but there's one of the great things about science right now is there's a tremendous amount of study of meditation and breathing. And some of the studies are revealing all kinds of data that we didn't have before. One of the interesting parts about all of the new science that I think is positive, the technology explosion, is that they're learning so much about the brain now with the new brain scanners that the neuroscience field is exploding. And we're going to know more and more from a scientific standpoint over the next few years.
It's interesting what Richard said, this notion that even when you're meditating, your brain is still working at a very high level. That's an interesting idea to me. Yeah,
that's correct.
Yeah.
What he's referring to is one of the many ways that meditation can help you. But certainly there have been many scientific studies that show that meditation is essentially an invaluable tool that no one should discard. And the problem is I think most people don't teach meditation so well. They ask people who are stressed out of their mind to sit still and close their eyes.
Yeah.
And that's really impossible for most people.
Let's get one more phone call here before a break. Evan from Westwood. Evan, you're on Up to Date with Max Strom. Good morning.
Good morning, Max. So nice to see you. I always enjoy going to your workshops.
Thank you. Thank you for calling.
I was trying to ask an interesting question, and it was – what do you know about the American Indian terms for, or Native American terms for, fire eaters, the people that use the smoking and breathing for their rituals?
You know, I really don't know anything about it. That's
have you heard the term?
No, I haven't.
Fire eaters. No. All right, I'll bring it with me when I see you Sunday.
Okay, that's great. Next time I'll know. Thank you very much.
Evan, thank
Thanks
you.
Thanks so much. Okay, bye-bye.
Just for the record, I know how to juggle and eat fire. I used to do it for kids when I was going through college to make a few extra bucks. A little known fact about Steve Kraske. Okay, time for a break here. When we come back, we'll continue our very good conversation about yoga and the benefits of yoga with Max Strom. If you want to chime in about your own experience with yoga, 816-235-2888 or email us uptodate@kcur.org. Later on this hour, the latest installment of 90 Mile View, and Brian McTavish will drop by with his weekend to-do list. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. And we're back. I'm Steve Kraske. We're visiting with Max Strom this hour. He teaches personal transformation and yoga worldwide. Max, we were talking in our first half about the importance of breathing. There's a new study from Stanford that just came out that talks about the importance of breathing with veterans suffering from post-traumatic stress syndrome.
That's right.
What are we hearing about that?
Well, I'm so grateful that the study was done in Stanford, and they basically taught breathing exercise like I'm talking about to vets suffering from pretty heavy post-traumatic stress syndrome. And they found that not only did this help alleviate their symptoms tremendously, but after they stopped doing it, the symptoms still didn't return for up to a year later when they checked in with them again. So it had a long-term benefit, not just short-term. Now, the Defense Department, most people don't know this yet, is starting to advocate yoga, breathing, and breathing especially for vets coming back from war.
That is so interesting.
Yeah, because in this country there's a stigma that yoga is for women, isn't there?
You know, why is that? And there are lots of stigmas with yoga. One is that a big guy like you would struggle with yoga, and I know from personal experience that's not the case either.
No. I think there are many factors pertaining to that, but the most important part is that if you approach yoga as a sport, a stiff guy is going to look at it and say, well, I can't do that. I'll never be good at that, so why should I do it? But if you look at it as therapy, something that will make you healthier and more flexible, but also stronger in your core, et cetera, and don't forget, sleep better and feel less stress, it's one-stop shopping. Don't approach it as a sport. Approach it as something that's good for you, and that you do, you know, at least three times a week, but maybe more.
You know, the differences in the flexibility of the body between different individuals is just fascinating. I mean, women particularly, some women can, you know, turn themselves into pretzels, where, you know, half the guys in the room are still at 90 degree angles. And but not that it doesn't matter, but it's just it's just fascinating to watch what the body can do in different people.
It is, but most people in their daily life, they're not, and who are listening, aren't interested in becoming a pretzel, and I'm not either, quite honestly, and I don't teach that because what's the point? I mean, what's the final result? I've interviewed people from Cirque du Soleil. I've interviewed contortionists from Cirque du Soleil, and they're just regular people with regular problems, and some of them, after every show, they get drunk every night on vodka till they pass out, especially the Russians and the Ukrainians. Because they're just jocks.
Yeah.
They want to party after the show.
Yeah.
My point is that they're not wrong for doing that. That's their business. But to think that being a contortionist is going to make you a better person, a happier person, or a healthier person is a false idea.
Yeah. Let's go back to some phone calls here. And Sarah Lynn from Overland Park. Sarah Lynn, welcome to Up to Date. Our guest, Max Strom. Good morning.
Yes, thanks. I just wanted to mention the healing benefits. I'd had psoriasis since I was an adolescent, and it ceased to be after yoga. And I attribute it to the twisting motions, the purging of the internal organs, the wringing out of the internal organs, that it certainly worked for me.
Excellent.
Yeah. Great thought, Sarah Lynn.
Okay.
Thank you for calling.
Thank you.
Yeah. Mindy tweeted us this. Thanks for the reminder to slow down. Is there a link between anxiety and depression and obesity and technology?
Well, certainly obesity and technology, a body in motion tends to stay in motion and vice versa. So if someone is sitting in front of a computer or a gaming board or their own whatever, their little blue screen, they're not moving. And so, of course, obesity is going to occur. Anxiety, the best thing I can say about anxiety, the best remedy for anxiety is learn to breathe. Do breathing exercises. If you don't know how to do them, learn them. Because anxiety is something that is actually quite easy to overcome if you do it right. And there are so many people suffering from anxiety in this country. It is a crime as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, that's interesting.
But if you go to a doctor and ask, what should I do? Most likely, you're going to be prescribed medication, which means it's not going to change. It's just going to suppress the symptoms.
And Max, we just have a little bit of time left. Give us a quick primer here. Yoga comes in so many different categories, different styles, different types. Just walk us through three or four of those different types and what people might want to think about.
Okay. Well, some people, let me start over. There's a style called hot yoga, which is in the papers a lot lately. And so people are familiar with that. And about 20% of the population can really benefit from that, especially if they live in a cold climate. 20% of the population where your hands are always cold, your feet are always cold, your husband or wife kicks your feet away at night.
That'd be me.
Okay.
Yeah.
So practicing in a hot environment where they raise the temperature with the heaters may be appropriate for you. But for a lot of the population, it's way too hot and should be avoided. You'll just feel like you're going to have a heart attack and die.
Mm.
So that's one thing to consider, is which environment to practice in. Another is when you're looking for a teacher, the teacher is more important than the style.
That's interesting.
Look for someone who is kind, who doesn't sexualize you or themselves, and who never browbeats you, but is a supportive friend.
Again, Max is conducting a pair of workshops this Sunday in connection with the Yoga Gallery in downtown Overland Park. You can learn about breathing and learn about also one workshop on personal ethics. It's appropriate for people with no yoga experience whatsoever. More information at yogagallery.com. There's also a link on our website, kcur.org. Max, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you here.